Good afternoon. Welcome to our first presentation on emergence. We will begin with a question of autopoiesis, then look at the early history of the concept. We will offer a definition of emergence, and finally look at the attributes of emergent systems. When one thinks about the particles of matter, and then extends one's consideration to the concepts of life and mind, which has come into being from the chaos of that singular event, the Big Bang, the likelihood of such an arising is both staggering and truly amazing. It is staggering because our universe thermodynamically favors entropy, and life requires exquisite order. It is amazing because order not only exists and persists, resisting the constant entropic pull, but ascends the ladder of complexity with new orders of being coming into existence over time. Cardinal Schoborn, in his book Chance or Purpose, asks, "Can lower things bring forth from their own power higher and more complex things?" Nothing in our experience suggests that something lower can give rise to something higher, simply of itself, without some directive and organizing activity, and still less to do so, and quite by chance. We can certainly understand Schoborn's point. For example, we can observe geometric patterns emerge on the sandy shore as the energy from waves roll the tiny sand grains about. But a complex sandcastle replete with windows, towers, and turrets will not spontaneously emerge by chance, the greater from the lesser, even over eons of time. And what about chance? When you think of chance events, what comes to mind for you? The tossing of a coin? The happy finding of a $20 bill? The 100-year flood, perhaps? Your first thought is probably not the majestic form of a sea lion, or the intricate and profound complexity of the human child. But what do we mean by chance? Uncertainty or an unpredictable event? Yet events can change from being entirely uncertain to practically certain, depending on your field of view. Reduce the field of view and you increase uncertainty. Increase the field of view and you reduce uncertainty. For example, will the 100-year flood take place next year? I am not certain. Will it take place in the next 1,000 years? It is almost certain that it shall. This seemingly incoherent and counterintuitive idea of the lesser giving rise to the greater through its own power, and apparently quite by chance, is exactly the idea that is presented by the scientific community to the world. And it begs the question, how is this possible? I propose that the answer lies in the concept of emergence. The root of this term comes from the Latin emergo, which means to arise or come forth. I propose, along with others, that emergence is an inherent tendency with which matter has been endowed from the beginning at its most fundamental level. Emergence is recognized in the appearance of novelty that arises at discrete levels in the hierarchy of order and complexity in physical systems and along the evolutionary path. I offer to you that emergent theory accounts for the rise of order in an open system that energetically favors entropy, the lesser giving rise to the greater through autopoietic processes, the appearance of supervenient novelty, the distinctness of that novelty from the supporting microstructure, and that emergent theory accounts for the property of life that arises at the level of the cell. Before we look at the history of emergent theory, I would like to point out the two different approaches that both scientists and philosophers use to deepen their understanding of this concept. The study of emergence can be approached from an ontological point of view. In this case, the question addresses the fundamental nature of the emergent entity. The debaters argue between the physicalists' assertion that only elementary particles and their four fundamental forces are real and are of any ontological significance, and the emergentists' assertion that the property of life is novel and is ontologically significant. The study of emergence can also be approached from the epistemological point of view. Here the questions are based on what we know, what can be known, and what are the limits on our knowledge. Physicalists approach the material world epistemically from a reductionist stance, failing to see how profoundly above and beyond the microstructure certain emergent novelties are, such as life or the mind. They suggest that current limits to our knowledge and the complexity of nonlinear systems, such as the cell and multicellular organisms, prevent our seeing the pathway to reduction. So when and where did the concept of emergence come from? The idea of emergence arose in that period of transition when the faith-based pre-modern age gradually transitioned to the science-based mechanistic modern age. Emergent theory grew in opposition to two dominant philosophies, reductive physicalism and vitalism. Physicalism holds that there is nothing over and above the physical, that all biological phenomena can be reduced in fact or in principle to the elementary particles of physics and their four fundamental forces. Physicalism also states that all causal power is bottom-up. That is, power stems from the fundamental forces alone. Vitalism, on the other hand, suggests that vital, non-physical forces were required in addition to the physical to animate inanimate matter. Emergence arose in the minds of a small group of British philosophers, commonly known as the British Emergentists, in protest to both of these philosophies. This group included John Stuart Mill, George Henry Lewes, Samuel Alexander, Conway Lord Morgan, and Charles Dunbar Broad. John Mill was born in London in 1806. His father, a Scottish philosopher, dispensed with his childhood, starting him in Greek studies at the age of 3 and the study of logic at the age of 12, and it almost cost John his sanity. It was in Book 3 of this series on the system of logic that John Stuart Mill planted the seed for emergence. He was immersed in his study on the co-joint action of causes when he drew up an important distinction between the mechanical and chemical modes of action. He differentiated between these two systems by processing homeopathic effects and laws, which he attributed to mechanical systems, and heteropathic effects and laws, which he attributed to chemical systems. He demonstrated that homeopathic effects followed the principle of the composition of causes, whereas heteropathic effects did not. They appeared to be more than the sum of the individual effects. George Henry Lewes was also born in London around 1817. He was influenced by John Mill and became fascinated with the mind-body problem. Lewes expanded on Mill's treatment of causes and effects by introducing the problem of reduction. For Lewes, the homeopathic effects culminated in a resultant, which was clearly reducible to the effects of the sum of its parts, whereas the heteropathic system culminated in an emergent, which was clearly distinct from the sum of the effects of the parts and not reducible to them. Thus, Lewes introduced the term emergent and proposed three concepts concerning this term. Emergence was a theory about the structure of the natural world. Emergence was a relation between the properties of an entity and its parts. And the question of emergence was related to the question of reduction. Samuel Alexander was born in Melbourne in 1859, just before the death of George Henry Lewes. He was educated at the University of Melbourne and later in mathematics at Oxford. Samuel Alexander felt compelled to unite the sciences in a comprehensive packet based on the fundamental reality of space and time. Conway Lord Morgan strongly influenced his thinking. Alexander saw matter itself as emergent from space and time, life as an emergent quality from matter, and the mind as an emergent from life. In this way, Samuel Alexander contributed to the understanding of different levels in the organization of matter and how emergent qualities manifest at the different levels. Conway Lord Morgan was born in London. Morgan was particularly fascinated with a fuzzy realm that lay between instinct and intelligence, between innate behavior and conscious behavior. Morgan was grounded in Darwin's theory, but he questioned the suggestion of a continuous process. Morgan thought that if you accepted a continuous process for the mind, then you must also accept that all animals have the faculties of men, except to a lesser and lesser degree as you descend the scale of nature. Morgan argued for the emergence of novelty at critical points in the evolutionary process, novelty such as life or such as the mind, and that these novel entities were not present in earlier stages in a lesser form, that these emergent entities were unpredictable and arose from the unpredictable arrangement of the microstructure and were entirely new. Now, Morgan gave credit to God for gifting matter with this capability of emergence. Morgan stated that emergent evolution rose in protest to the mechanistic interpretation of the natural world. And it was probably for this reason that Morgan's writing on emergence wasn't very popular with the general scientific community. Charlie Dunbar Broad was born in Middlesex in around 1887. Precocious and bright, he won a scholarship to Trinity College, Cambridge, where he studied mathematics, science, and philosophy. His interest in emergence started in response to the hot debate between mechanists and vitalists. Broad was not convinced by the strictly mechanistic approach, and the more moderate approach offered by emergence appealed to him. He agreed with G.H. Lewes that certain natural phenomena were irreducible. He agreed with C.L. Morgan that certain manifestations, such as life and mind, could not be logically construed. And even from the most complete knowledge about the properties and effects of the parts. What intrigued Broad was the relationship between the new level of being and the laws that accompany that, and the laws that operated in the pre-emergent condition, and how these laws would be integrated into the whole, the mature emergent system. Broad saw intraordinal laws operating horizontally at discrete levels, and transordinal laws operating vertically, bridging between levels. Thus, this small, thoughtful group of men laid the foundation of emergent theory. Let's have a look at a definition of emergence. A property is emergent if it is a novel property of a system or an entity that arises when that system or entity has reached a certain level of complexity, and that even though it exists only in so far as the system or entity exists, yet it is distinct from the properties or parts of the system from which it emerges. This is a definition that I took from the Internet Encyclopedia of Philosophy by Ellie Vintiatis. Since I am interested in examples of strong emergence, I tried putting together a more comprehensive definition. An entity is strongly emergent if it is a novel quality, ontologically distinct from the constituent parts, and is irreducible, unpredictable, non-deducible, and exhibits downward causal power over the microstructure on which it supervenes, and that it is instantiated from a type of physical configuration that marks a required level of complexity, and that the system as a whole is responsive to the new, effective relationship. With this in mind, we look at a complex system such as the cell, and we see it is made up of organelles, which in turn are made up of molecules, which in turn are made up of atoms, which in turn are made up of subatomic particles and their forces. Observing the parts of the cell independently, we do not see any property or process that equates with life. But the moment a whole and an entire cell is constructed, the property of life emerges along with its homeostatic controls and its integrated system of responses. This is entirely novel to anything pertaining to the parts that are independent of each other, or to subsystems of interacting parts. Life only emerges in the whole, working, complex system, the cell. Is the living cell, then, with this effective property of life, a new, fundamental reality? I would say, yes, it is. What do you think? Let's look at the attribute of irreducibility. According to the mechanistic position, everything natural is reducible to the fundamental particles of physics and their forces under a single fundamental law. For example, Francis Crick states this: you, your joys and sorrows, your memories and your ambitions, your sense of personal identity and free will are in fact no more than the behavior of a vast assembly of nerve cells and their associated molecules. But the emergent position rejects this point of view, seeing the mind and its ability for speculative inquiry as over and above the physical reality of interacting neurons. Hilary Putnam's evidence that supports multiple realizability makes it clear that patterns of thought are not absolutely linked to one physical neuronal configuration. In another example, the physical presence of an organism with all its parts in the correct ratios and arrangements may or may not have the emergent property of life. While life is dependent upon the physical configuration of the whole, it is yet distinct from it. How about unpredictability? Emergent entities are unpredictable. Something is unpredictable when you cannot foresee the consequences of the interactions of the microstructure. If we take the example of G.H. Liu's resultant, we can clearly see that the parts of an engine will, when constructed, produce a force capable of moving a machine. The engine as a whole is both predictable and reducible. A feature of emergence is that no matter how intimately you know the structure and properties of the microstructure, you cannot foresee or predict a priori the outcome of advanced complexity in the macrostructure. Yeguan Kim differentiates between inductive predictability and theoretical predictability. I think this is an important point. If cells have the property of life, and this particular entity is the cell, then of course I can inductively predict it will have the property of life. Whereas If all I know is the parts of a cell, the various organelles, and the various properties of those parts, I could not theoretically predict the quality of life in the macrostructure composed of those interacting parts. George Ellis, in his paper on the nature of causation in complex systems, proposes five categories of downward causality. First, he proposes algorithmic top-down causation. For example, environmental cues regulate both transcription and post-transcription rates through effects on transcription factors. This causes adaptive responses. Secondly, causation through non-adaptive information control. For example, energy intake and metabolic rates are controlled by adipose tissue hormones such as leptin. The lipostat hypothesis suggests control of intake through gauging the state of nutrition of that organism. A third one, causation through adaptive selection. For example, T and B cells select when immunocompetent lymphocytes encounter a foreign antigen. Fourthly, causation through adaptive information control. For example, environmentally triggered transduction pathways regulate homeostatic mechanisms that change with the environmental cues. And lastly, George Ellis proposes intelligent top-down causation. How thoughts lead to plans, how plans lead to actions, of which you can think of many examples. Robert Hazen, in his work, links emergent systems to complex systems. He states complexity appears to be the hallmark of every emergent system. Hazen also accepts the property of life as emergent when he states, life is the most dramatic of all known emergent phenomena. According to Hazen, if life is emergent, then the cell must meet the criteria for complex systems, since the property of life arises at the level of the cell. He identifies four distinct factors that contribute to complexity: concentration, interconnectivity, energy flow, and energy cycling. You have only to study a protozoan to find all of these properties present and to come to the conclusion that life must indeed be emergent. Thank you very much.